Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You're listening to WCOM LP 103.5 FM, Carborough and Chapel Hill. It's a Tuesday, it's 5 o'clock, and that only means one thing. It's time for another round of Snarky Faith with your host, Stuart Deloney. This is a space where we irreverently wrestle through life, culture and spirituality, all with our heads in the clouds, our tongues in our cheeks, our hearts in our sleeves, and our feet on the ground. At Snarky Faith, the questions or even the answers are never the point. It's all about the conversation. So here's your host, Stuart Deloney.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to another round of Snarky Faith. I'm your host, Stuart Deloney, and Snarky Faith is radio for the spiritually disenfranchised. If you've had enough of the insanity in Christianity, you have come to the right place. Here at Snarky Faith, we're all about finding a safe, sane faith grounded in reality, working to make the world a better place in tangible ways. This is not a zone for spiritual escapism, Sunday school answers, or Christianese. We're here to call out religious BS and look for better ways forward. If you can handle your conversations about faith with copious amounts of
sarcasm
and also a little bit of this, then you've come to the right place. Welcome home. On today's show, I will be sitting down with the hippie Catholic Cassidy Bean, and we're going to be talking about what she's doing online, and I think you're going to find it a fascinating conversation. She's a fun person to have a chat with, and I love the directions that we go into in our conversation, so I believe that you will enjoy that a lot today. But before we descend into the snark, just a reminder that this broadcast and all past podcasts can be found at www.snarkyfaith.com and anywhere else you listen to podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, YouTube. We're here, we're there, we're everywhere. Just look for Snarky Faith. If you want to interact more with the show, you can find Snarky Faith page on Facebook. You can drop me a line at questions@snarkyfaith.com. And there's even a Snarky hotline if you want to leave a message that will probably end up on the air. The number is 919-525-1570. That's 919-525-1570. Well, starting off the show today, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a check-in as to how I'm doing. Now, it may seem odd because I'm the one talking on the radio all the time, and you hear plenty of from me, but I get messages from listeners sometimes wanting to check in and be like, Stuart, how are you doing? And in my mind, I'm always like, well, you should know. You listen to the radio show. This is my therapy. But I guess somehow as I'm therapizing the death of Christianity in America and hopeful new ways forward, I somehow miss on, telling a little more about myself. So here goes. I'm going to talk to you guys just a little bit about a snippet of kind of what's going on in my life right now. I'm in that place of entering a new season in life, and entering into new seasons is often like being born. It's messy, there's crying, and your wife is always screaming. In the past, I've always been able to like embrace change and was typically eager to leave the old behind and run to the new. And I don't know if that's because of my like short attention span, but I'm one that gets weary and tired of sameness very quickly. Creatively, I'm always looking for something new that fascinates me or requires me to learn something. Though I will tell you, this new season I've entered into, it's a bit of a curveball. Now, right around the time COVID restrictions began opening up, my wife got a new job outside the home. Now, thankfully, during the pandemic, it didn't really change our routines that much, because we've both been telecommuters for years. We've been people that work from home. So that was kind of a blessing during that time. But, this move of my wife leaving the house officially meant that I became a house husband. That is right. I am officially now a house husband. Now, this isn't my first rodeo of being a working from home father, But the last time I did it, my sophomore in college was watching Baby Einstein. So it's been a while where I'm the main caregiver of kids and trying to work at the same time. But now I find myself in this weird position because I'm now surrounded by four often surly teenagers. And it's summer, so you know now they've entered into the molting stage of making big messes and sleeping till noon and beyond. So I'm in a place right now where I'm outmanned and I'm outgunned. And these are dangerous waters for a house husband. But hopefully I shall prevail. Hopefully life will continue on. And hopefully we can survive all of this. So that's how I'm doing. How are you guys doing? I hope you're all doing well. And I hope everyone stateside enjoyed their 4th of July long weekend. For the rest of you guys, I hope you're doing well on wherever you find yourself in the world. Well, first things first today on the show, we have not done this for several weeks on the show. And it's time to bring it back. That's right. We need some of the Christian crazy of the week, where we highlight the choicest cuts of Christian nuts, the ones that make Christianity all about insanity. They're the worst the church has to offer, but they're the best that we have to offer here today to laugh and mock at these fools. Don't believe me? I'll give you just a little snippet of kind of what we're getting into today before we even get into it, right? Case in point, we have apostle or self-proclaimed apostle, Catherine Cricks. Catherine is going to say a bunch of Christianese together and string it into sentences and kind of paragraphs. And I'm not really sure what she's saying here. I've been around Christianity my whole life, and I know people eat this kind of crap up. But if you really think about what she's saying, it is meaningless. It is drivel. It's nothingness. So enjoy.
You want to receive complete freedom? Be unashamed. Be proud of Jesus. These miracles are for the world to see, to lead people to Jesus, not to be hidden. You are pleasing God just by having this heart of, I'm hungry to receive freedom from you, Jesus, and I don't care what it looks like. Use it for your glory, God. There can be a video of you moving upon me in power, and millions can see it. That's an honor because you are seen through the wonders that were done through me. Now others can see your love. That's when you'll receive complete freedom, when you have that heart.
I have no idea what she's saying. No friggin' clue. But that's a great primer for us going into the Christian crazy of the week. Here we go.
If loving the Lord is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Lord have mercy. The Lord is my shepherd. He know what I want.
All right, first off, we've got Hank Kunivan. And Hank is going to be kind of letting you into a little bit of his worries and insecurities about life. And, you know, I don't know, people are just laughing at me. And, oh, God, come on. I don't like it when people laugh at me. But if you're Hank Kunivan, you're asking to be laughed at. It's kind of your M.O. But what is Hank worried about? I don't know. Let's listen in on his...
God, people have laughed at you. They've laughed at your prophets. They've laughed at your church. They've laughed at your intercessors. They've laughed at the patriots. They've laughed for those that voted for 45. Now I pray that their laughter would be turned into silence.
No, I'm just kidding. That's so stupid. It's so stupid. And Petty, that yes, we are laughing. No, I don't think we're necessarily laughing at God or whoever that guy's God is. We're not laughing at that, but yes, are we laughing at the prophets and intercessors and those that voted for 45? Yes. So yes, Hank, they are laughing at you. Didn't you remember what your mother once told you?
No! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
A little classic Adam Sandler in there for just good measure. You know, the Bible refers to Jesus as the King of Glory, so what would Hank be, the King of Bullshit? Yeah, smells about right. Now, in the news lately, there's a lot of talk about critical race theory. Now, I'll give you a working definition for this. This comes from Education Week. Critical race theory is an academic concept that is more than 40 years old. The core idea is that race is a social construct, that racism is not merely the product of individual bias or prejudice, but also something embedded into legal systems and policies. Simply put. Okay. Now, do you want to hear someone's grandpa try to explain that, right? Or maybe just some sort of an idiot on TV that's probably older than your grandpa Pat Robertson try to explain critical race theory. You heard what I had to say about it. Now let's see what Pat's going to try to say it does and is going to do.
What is it that the people of color have been oppressed by the white people, and the white people begin to be racist by the time they're 2 or 3 months old, and therefore the people of color have to rise up and overtake their oppressors, and then, having gotten the whip handle, if I can use that term, then to instruct their white neighbors how to behave. Now, that's critical race theory.
No, that's not. That is not critical race theory. That is some old man's, like, horny fever dream that he's going to get oppressed and people are going to tell him what to do with whips and stuff. Naughty. That's not critical race theory. That's called being a sub. Oh, Pat. Oh, you old codger. Nasty old man. So if you thought that was stupid, I want you to hear even something dumber from the mouth of an idiot. And that's like, fine, of a mouth of a really dumb fucking idiot. His name is Robin Bullock. If you haven't ever seen Robin Bullock, Robin Bullock looks like a throwback from like the 80s hair bands that never got the memo that the 80s are over. Yeah, Robin is going to be giving us he's made a key discovery in scripture. Somehow he's made a key discovery, which just happens to be a conspiracy theory that's not really born out of any good reading of scripture at all. But let's just try, after talking about critical race theory, I just want to see if we can kind of find some inherent racism here, because it's racist. What he's going after here is a racist trope, because that works for him and his brand.
In the book of Luke, I believe it is, when it says, I beheld, Jesus said, I beheld Satan fall as lightning from heaven. Remember that? You've read that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in Hebrew, it says something like this. If you read it in Hebrew, it says something like this. I beheld Satan fall from the heights. Or actually, it says, I beheld Satan as Barack Obama.
What?
It says it. It says, I beheld him as Barack Obama or something like that. In other words, it refers to that name, Barack Obama. And he says, he didn't say he was Satan. He said, I beheld him as him. And so he walks out on the throne of Satan, declares everything he declares, signs into law Baal worship just like that.
Oh, I do remember the time where we had the Baal worship thing go through Congress and it passed unanimously. Oh, I remember the amendment about Baal worship. What? No, this whole stupid trope of the black devil that they're trying to get out here. First of all, this makes no sense at all. One, he's reading the Hebrew incorrectly. That, not that we could even assume that Robin knows how to read English correctly. But one, he's going after the fact, two, saying that Jesus said this. But the dumb thing is, let's just think about this, biblical scholars. What did Jesus, spoke in Aramaic. So first of all, when we're talking about a translation and the utterance and a sound that doesn't even make as much of the sound sense as he's trying to make, it doesn't make any sense. Secondarily, there's no linguistic tie to any of this. So somehow Jesus was like thrown in a little zinger like 2,000 years ago. Like, ooh, we'll do this. And I wonder who's going to find the little crumbs to this. Because really, okay, let's even pretend it does sound like it, which it doesn't. Let's just pretend. So all that's saying is, like, lightning and a high place. That's all that they would be referring to. If that set those two words, which those are the two words, lightning and a high place. So that, oh no, Obama's lightning and a high place. It doesn't make any sense. This is illogical. It's stupid. It's idiotic. But I know these morons eat this crap up like cereal for breakfast on Saturday morning when you're watching cartoons. It's that bad. It's true. But something else to talk about is that they say there's things like death and taxes that never change. You know what else is like death and taxes never change? The fact that Jim Baker needs some money, he needs your money. Jim's not doing so good. He needs more money.
And I'm asking everyone who would say, Jim, I am going to stand with you. We're going to beat the devil back.
Amen.
We're going to beat him back into hell where he belongs.
Ooh, praise God.
And we're not going to... I mean, the massiveness of what God is doing through the ministry is so unbelievable that I just know if everyone gives, we're going to make it through this.
Yeah,
it's going to grow and grow and grow. If you can give the $1,000, do it. If you can give the $100 offering, you can do that. If anyone still, you know, the special PTL blanket, you can ask for that.
Yes.
And if you just ask for it, we'll be able to send that to you as well. And the cup, you get the PTL
mug.
Prophets
mug.
Mm-hmm. Call me right now, would you please? We need help.
We need help. You know what I need? I need a prophet's mug. Because, like, what is that? Like, what does it do? I'm really, really curious. Like, does it give you prophecies when you drink it? If you pour, like, water in it, can you see prophecies in the cup? I mean, it can't just be a cup that has PTL slapped on the side of it. It can't be that. Because that's what they did with the blanket. But, you know, cup, blanket, that is worth $1,000. Totally. It's totally great. Anyone want to know why they need money right now desperately? No, that's not like a punchline, do a joke. It's actually, you're right. They always want money. They always want money. But now in particular, Jim has gotten himself into trouble by selling false COVID cures. So yeah, the Jim Baker Show owes a lot of money to the state that they're in, paying off his crazy, crazy COVID cures that were liquid silver, they'll cure you. Yeah.
Call me right now, would you please? We need help.
So I have saved the best for last for you. I couldn't have done this earlier. Like, if we would have let this clip in the Christian Crazy too early, it would have just ruined the rest of it. It just would have ruined everything. Because we had to really move towards this whole crescendo moment where everything comes together. Yes. And I do this simply because I love you. Because you are my favorite listener. You know how you are out there. It's you. You're my favorite listener. And I do this because I love and care for you. And this is a wonderful present, a wonderful gift. And today, you even get double Hank Gooneman. So Hank is going to be talking, as he does, kind of out his ass. But I want you to pick up on, since you can't see the video portion of this, I want you to pick up on who's he talking about. And when he does, it's going to be amazing.
There's a scripture that says that there was a man sent from heaven, and his name was John. There's a man sent from heaven named Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of My Pillow.
Converged. It's all coming together. That's right. King of bullshit, Hank Gooneman has joined with Mike Lindell. I mean, it's moments like these that make the Christian Crazy worth it. You don't always see these things coming together like this, but it's just so beautiful. It's just so beautiful seeing these two whack jobs from different circles, from different places in the world, all coming together to spread their crazy, crazy bullshit. It's just so beautiful. So actually, wait, what were they saying again? It gets worse. So let me actually now let you listen to what he was trying to say.
There's a man sent from heaven named Mike Lindell, that God is using to wake up America with a different kind of awakening, and it's called a great awakening to the truth. And truth will have a voice, and I want to just say this.
I will say this. That's a terrible title. That's not going to fit on a t-shirt. A great awakening to the truth, and the truth will have a voice. Nah, that doesn't have a good... It doesn't have, like, the MAGA thing to it. It doesn't, you know... Just doesn't roll off the tongue. It's really going to be hard to create a movement around a great awakening to the truth, and the truth will have a voice. Yeah.
Pastor Gene, you know, God prophesied back August 16th of 2020. So maybe you're watching, you're saying, well, I don't believe in prophecy. Well, listen to this. August 16, documented prophecy from our ministry. God said they would steal the election, it would be delayed, and that they would have a planned, chaotic thing that they would do. The prophecy then goes on and says, God will give a sign. There'll come a great unmasking. And when the masks come off the mouths, you will see who did this, where they did this, when they did this, and why they did this. And God says when that mask comes off, there will be a removal of political figures. Boy, I wonder who that can be.
Oh, I just love it. Then so when people take off their masks, we can now see, because Hank's been wearing his mask wrong the entire time. That's why a lot of conservatives don't want to wear masks. They keep wearing them across their eyes. Those idiots. Oh, man, Hank. The great unmasking. Ah, it's beautiful. I just love that you're working with Mike Lindell now. This is just, it's wonderful. All right, enough of this frivolity. I did promise you guys a conversation with the hippie Catholic, so I better deliver on this, because you guys are, you know, expecting top shelf stuff here. So, without further ado...
Call me right now, would you please? We need help.
Wait a second! Stop it, Jim! Stop it, Jim! No, no! Bad Jim Baker! Bad Jim Baker! Off the couch! Bet Jim Baker.
Call me right now.
Well, joining us today on the show is Cassidy Bean. Cassidy is known as the Hippie Catholic. She's an online content creator, singer, songwriter, and writer. You can find her on YouTube, TikTok, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So, Cassidy, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for this. I love your podcast. So,
I'm excited to have you on. I love the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
So let's go ahead. So I want you just to unpack a little bit about the hippie Catholic, because I'm assuming this, maybe my assumption's wrong, but my question here is, so how did you go from being a kid doing confirmation, a nice little Catholic girl, to becoming the hippie Catholic?
Yeah. So basically the way my faith journey started, I am a cradle Catholic. Like you said, I was confirmed, you know, in eighth grade, kind of went through the motions of, you know, being a Catholic public school kid. After I was confirmed, I actually kind of became spiritual but not religious for a few years, like in my high school years. And going into college, I kind of was religiously unaffiliated but still believed in God. I feel like that last Catholic experience kind of gives me, like, I can kind of look into like the secular perspective in a way that I think Catholics that never really had that experience can't really like get in the shoes of somebody who maybe like is spiritual but not religious. Or I was also agnostic and atheist for a little bit in college, because there was kind of some traumatic things in my life, and kind of that journey of disbelief kind of led me to where I am now, because I kind of had to deconstruct everything that I had previously believed. And I kind of had a 360 turnaround, literally. Like, I started being Catholic, came back as being Catholic. And it was from that faith journey that kind of brought me to where I am today, because basically I had to reread kind of all the adult Catholic literature or all the adult Catholic philosophical arguments for the existence of God, why, you know, belief in God is rational. And because I kind of already had that emotional faith, but I wanted to build that rational basis. So I was doing a lot of reading and I wanted somewhere to put it. So I made my YouTube channel. That was the first hippie Catholic platform that I made. And I went to a very liberal media arts college. And I love that college so much. And kind of, I realized that a lot of my friends, even if they weren't religiously affiliated, they were very Catholic to me in terms of conscience. Like, these people all had very, very loving hearts and were really genuinely trying to do the right thing. And to me, I was like, wow, these people have very well-formed consciences. Even if they have fallen away from organized religion, I still see God calling to them through their hearts. And so that was kind of what I was bringing to the table, because I wanted to call those people into organized religion if they want to join an organized religion. I wanted to be like, hey, there is a space for you, even if we're creating it right now. And I also wanted to show people that have been in organized religion their entire lives that, hey, people that are secular or identify as none on the religious surveys, they're not monsters. They're not out to ruin the church. A lot of them are just trying to find their way spiritually, just like everyone else. So the hippie Catholic name actually came about because my aunt at Christmas, we would talk about like how our family's Catholicism kind of was. And she'd be like, you know, we're not like a regular Catholic family. We're like hippie Catholics, you know, like we're cool, you know, we're more laid back. And so I started using that term for myself when I would talk to, you know, liberal arts college students about like my Catholicism, and my friends would go and say, oh no, she's not like a fundamentalist, you know, she's a hippie Catholic, she's chill, she's cool. So then that would kind of open up the conversation. So yeah, it's a little bit about me and my faith.
No, I love that. I love that what you're trying to do here. And so is that correct? Like, would you say the aim of what you're doing with the hippie Catholic is also to make people look at God in a different way, or even look at Catholicism in a different way? Would that be true?
Oh yeah, that would definitely be true, because I realized that the parish that I grew up in, which was pretty liberal leaning, was not the kind of parish that most of my friends grew up in. I realized that the faith that I was raised with was kind of like kept in this little protected bubble that wasn't what a lot of Catholicism was, unfortunately. And eventually that parish kind of got under new management and eventually did become very conservative, which was a shame. And that actually was a reason why I became spiritual but not religious for a time, because after that shift happened, my family kind of didn't feel like we had a place there anymore. So we were kind of between parishes, and I kind of wanted to explore things for myself. So I realized that since what I was raised with was wasn't really the norm, I kind of had to show people what it was and what it could be in the future. I would love to see parishes like the one I grew up with more prominent again.
Now you would call yourself a progressive Roman Catholic.
Yes.
So what I want to know is, like, what does that look like in practice? Because come on, aren't all Catholics Republican?
Yeah. So kind of my models, you know, for my faith, like one of my biggest role models is Dorothy Day. She's servant of God right now, which means she is on the path to sainthood. And she was actually an anarchist her entire life and was a practicing Roman Catholic. She founded the Catholic Worker, which is still a very thriving Catholic organization to this day, that it's very radically pacifist. It's very, you know, it's very social justice oriented. And Dorothy Day was always seen kind of as like a holy fool, because she was kind of doing her work during the Cold War, where everybody was scared of being seen as a communist. And she even was put on an FBI watch list as like a dangerous person because she was a leftist and a Catholic. And she even sparred with her bishop a little bit, but like never to the point of disobedience, but they sparred a bit, even told her, the bishop even told her to take Catholic out of the Catholic Worker, and she refused, which I'm glad that she refused. So, I mean, I think that Catholics in this country, when you kind of dig into the religious political history of America, Catholics have kind of been very political on either side of the spectrum. They've either been very conservative or very progressive, depending on which issues they feel really drawn to be involved in, whether that be like, you know, justice for the poor or on the right. A lot of Catholics are purely Republican because of their stance on abortion. So yeah, that's kind of, I'm trying to think of like what like the religious history was. I kind of prepared this a little bit. But yeah, so basically like Irish immigrants came to America and they were more Democrat. So there's a Catholic Democrat history in this country too. So despite what the news and the media might tell you, not all Catholics are Republican.
Mm-hmm. Now for this, because you have had a journey that you have been brought up in the church, very much like my story, brought up like in a certain like realm of the church, kind of broke away from it and then came back to it. For you, what keeps you holding on to the Catholic Church? What keeps you coming back to that well?
I think the Eucharist is really what would always cause me back. So Catholics, we believe in the true presence of the Eucharist. So we believe that Jesus is physically present within the bread and the wine, which is different than a lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters. So when you believe that Jesus is truly present within this church and that the Holy Spirit is moving throughout the world through this church, even though it's an extremely broken institution, you still find yourself coming back. And I have found that the Catholic Church is simultaneously the most empowering institution in my life, and also the most limiting too. Depends on it's in kind of that duality draws me to it. And I feel like that it's just my calling to be a part of this church. And I feel like that, I don't know, I just feel like that people really need healing within the Catholic Church, especially after the abuse scandals and, you know, all of that. I just feel like that Catholicism needs to show its cards and have the hard conversations about what matters and talk openly about how the Catholic Church has contributed to, you know, the indigenous genocide, and, you know, how we have a troubled history. But I don't think that we have to be tied back because of that history. I think that we can make amends and start repairing those broken relationships. And I would really love to be a part of that in the church.
No, I love that. I love that, because part of me too, I've been a person that's worked in ministry for many years, and church and ministry can piss me off to no ends on many days. But it's you know, I keep coming back to just the teachings of Jesus within it, to where, it, you know, it, on a certain sense of it is, my anger at the church for how they've forsaken like the teachings of Jesus in so many ways is what keeps me coming back to being like, wait, not these guys. No, let's just look to this guy. Let's look to see what he said. They've kind of forgotten this. And so I understand that desire to not let go of it, to not just say it's a lost cause, to say that there is still something there. Now also I've read through some of your work too, that is this true that you would say that you are into Catholic mysticism? Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely.
So talk to me about your road to Catholic mysticism, because I find this fascinating.
So my road to Catholic mysticism was, I couldn't tell you when exactly it started. It just has kind of always existed in my life. I guess it kind of started with my very Catholic grandmother. She kind of always taught me about how important it was to pray the rosary, how important it was to pray. And I was kind of always fascinated with nature as a child. Like I was, you know, always barefoot running in the yard, always like loving the plants. And I was obsessed with animals to the point where I thought I was going to be a vet, but then I realized that you'd have to put animals asleep and I couldn't do that. So I kind of had this very creative view of creation as a child. Like I kind of always thought like that there was a deeper meaning to creation than just, you know, some chemicals reacting in the brain. I always felt like that there was something deeper and more intangible in creation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was kind of the start of my mysticism. I also kind of had some mystical experiences as I kind of got older in my teen years, which, you know, some people might laugh at, like the idea of spirits or ghosts or spiritual warfare or whatever, and that's totally up to them. But I kind of, in college, kind of became the person that whenever somebody was in need of prayers or somebody was like, hey, could you bless my apartment or something, I would be the one they would call, you know, to help. And actually, like, in college, people used to nickname me the mini exorcist, which I thought was funny. They're like, oh, she's the mini exorcist. And I'm just like, no. But yeah, so my mystical journey has been kind of lifelong. And I really, really love Richard Rohr's work. He's a Franciscan priest and a writer, and he has his own podcast too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like that mysticism is a big part of what keeps me Catholic too.
So what are some mystical practices that nourish you?
The rosary is probably my go-to, and it's a rather traditional prayer that people might think as, you know, maybe rather stuffy or your grandmother's rosary, but that's kind of why I like it. It's because I have a really lovely relationship with my grandmother. So it always makes me think of her when I pray it. And I think something that's cool about the rosary that a lot of people don't think about is that it's actually a very meditative prayer. As you go through the rosary, you meditate on different passages of scripture. You meditate on different parts of Jesus's life. Something that's cool, like an exercise that I like, is kind of trying to imagine yourself being in those scenes and imagining, like, what would you do during the, you know, what would you do during the passion? What would you do when Jesus was having all of those experiences? Yeah, like, and I feel like that's like a really grounding experience, is kind of contemplating those mysteries. And yeah, so that's kind of my number one. I also like to light incense. Like, I love to light holy incense. I like to light my candles, and you can find like prayer candles at like Dollar Tree, which I just think that's great. Like, I'm always like grabbing like the like Our Lady of Guadalupe carol. I can't speak. I'm always grabbing like the Our Lady of Guadalupe candles and the St. Michael candles, and I always feel like I look like a religious fanatic, and I'm like, it's fine. I'm a YouTuber. It's fine. I can say, oh yeah, it's for the channel. It's not for, you know, but oh geez, I'm trying to think of some other ones I like. So yeah, those are kind of like the main things that I do personally. And I also just try to have some time set aside for mindfulness. And the Ignatian spiritual exercises are really great too. I've been trying to get into that more. But yeah, like, kind of the rosary is kind of my go-to mystical thing that I do.
So, okay, so you were talking about, too, when you're, like, praying the rosary and thinking through things, you like to put yourself in the place of, like, where would I be in this spot, or where would I be? So, totally random question that you made me think of on the spot. So in John 21, this is after the resurrection, Jesus shows up to the disciples and cooks them breakfast. So, if Jesus showed up to you, what would he cook you for breakfast? Because I don't, would it be like, my go-to breakfast would not be fish and bread. So if Jesus is cooking you breakfast, what would it be?
Probably French toast, like cinnamon French toast, because I was obsessed with like cinnamon French toast as a kid. And like to the point where it was like the only thing I wanted to eat in the morning. And my mom was like, you need to get like nutrition in your body. And I'd be like, cinnamon French toast. Like, so I feel like that, yeah, cinnamon French toast. Definitely.
Love it, love it. I'm pretty sure Jesus would be all over that one. Now, I hear you have, from some of the stuff I've been reading too, I hear you have a patron saint. So who is your patron saint? Tell me a little about your patron saint.
So my patron saint is Joan of Arc, and she's a feminist saint icon. And kind of how I picked Joan of Arc as a saint was, I was a history nerd, sixth grader, you know, middle schooler. I loved the Percy Jackson books. I loved like Egyptian mythology. I loved like all of those nerdy history things. And I remember when I was taught about like the Middle Ages, I thought that Joan of Arc was just the coolest person. Like, her and Alexander the Great were like my two faves. Like, I was just obsessed. I was like such a fangirl for Joan of Arc. And then when I went to CCD after school, like, you know, to learn like the catechism, and I learned that Joan of Arc was a saint and that I could pick her as my confirmation saint. Mm-hmm. I was starstruck. I was like, I have to pick her. So I picked Joan of Arc, and I wrote like a little essay about her. And so I was able to pick her as my confirmation saint. And ironically enough, like, I didn't really pray to her until fairly recently. And I think it was because I was just very intimidated by her. Like, I don't know. I was such a fangirl of her that I was like, I can't pray to her to intercede for me. Like but for some reason I was okay with going up to God himself and praying for things, but like going to Joan of Arc to ask her to pray for me, oh no, too scary. But eventually that kind of changed, and my relationship with my patron saint has evolved over time, and I think that my prayer life has been enriched by asking her to intercede for me. And I also love Saint Edith Stein and the little flower, Saint Therese of Lisieux. She is amazing. Kind of like my favorite holy order is the Carmelite order. So like a lot of the saints that I really resonate with are Carmelites. Joan of Arc was not a Carmelite, but yeah, I kind of am really called to Carmelite spirituality, which this kind of ties back to the mysticism question you were talking about, because the Carmelite spirituality is all about trying to make your daily life a prayer. So like your daily mundane, like it's kind of contemplating how you can make your daily mundane life a prayer. Mm-hmm. That's also why like I wear like a scapular. It's like a brown scapular that's a part of Carmelite spirituality, and it's basically a reminder to tell you that every day everything you're doing is a prayer. Like praying is not just repeating words, it's not just kneeling at your bedside, it's what you do. It could be listening to music, it could be praying in mass, it could be doing so many different things that are not traditionally associated with prayer. So yeah, that's really empowering for me. And yeah, Joan of Arc has been a great feminist role model for me in my faith and beyond that.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So for someone who is less steeped in Catholic lore and patron saints, do you have any recommendations for me or a patron saint?
Ooh. Oh, okay. That's difficult. So
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I'm like, there's so many. I was like, I don't know. A lot of people love Thomas Aquinas. Okay. Thomas Aquinas is a little problematic, though. Just, yeah, putting that out there. I'm sorry. I'm trying to think of, like, what... Honestly, I feel like that you would, like, do well with Joan of Arc, too. I could see you being, like, a Joan of Arc person, like
me. I will have to dig into Joan more. Sounds like I need to do that. Good. Yeah. I liked it. Even, like, when you were talking about the idea of kind of engaging with life as prayer. And the mundane things, it made me think a lot about just what I've read of Brother Lawrence as well, too. You know, that idea that, you know, that just the simple things you do, that we are doing them, you know, almost as prayer. So good. So, okay, are you up for this? I have a very brief lightning round, and I promise this. So this is going to be, it's going to be Catholic-centric, and it'll be a little negative, but we will get positive after this. So, but this is your time to also unleash anything you may have in your soul. So in the lightning round here, these don't have to be extensive. It's just kind of gut reactions to these. Okay. So gut reaction to this. So how do you feel about priests cock blocking the Eucharist for political reasons? And I know using the word cock blocking is very problematic when I use any of the word cock and priests. So that's a whole different story. But yeah, so priests like stop blocking the Eucharist for political reasons. How do you feel about that?
I definitely think that weaponizing the Eucharist for political reasons is wrong. I think that people's salvation and their relationship with the Eucharist is a very private matter that should be worked out between their parish priest and their confessor. I don't think that that is the job of, you know, I just think that that's so messed up. Also, you want to know something that drives me nuts is that I hate when Republican Catholics try to say that Democrat Catholics aren't real Catholics. It's like, just say that you disagree with us, or say that, oh, I think you're not living this church teaching or something like that. But don't try to like deny people's Catholicism. That's so dumb. Like, I have no other way to put it. I feel like that people just say that because it's fun to share those sentiments online to be like, well, they're not a true Catholic anyway. Yeah. And it's so annoying. I just hate it.
Oh, even like I grew up around Southern Baptists, and they even like denominationally, they do that kind of thing till they'll be like, well, Methodists aren't like real Christians. Like, we are like the real Christians. Methodists don't do that. So it's that weird tribalism thing that people get into that's always kind of icky and gross when it comes to faith. All right, next question. Lightning round here. Female clergy. How do you feel about the Catholic Church, or lack thereof?
So for me, I would love to see women's ordination, especially to the diaconate, because I feel like that's the most likely situation at this time. If the church ever said that they want there to be women priests, I would be down for it, mm-hmm. for sure.
I think there should be too. I love it. And so what about also, last one, about the gay union blessing ban that has happened within?
Ooh, so that like broke my heart when that came out, but it was not surprising coming from, you know, the CDF, like CDF documents tend to really have a long-standing stance against like LGBTQ progression within the church. They also have that council kind of has a, or that department kind of has a troubling history with women too, and trying to reprimand women for, you know, not being silent. So I wasn't surprised that group within the Vatican came out against blessing same-sex civil unions, but I felt like it was so unnecessary. Yeah, I feel like that, I don't know if you heard this recently, but Pope Francis actually sent a handwritten letter to Father James Martin, who is kind of the main celebrity Jesuit priest who works with LGBTQ people. And Pope Francis said that he supports Father James Martin's ministry. So I felt like that was like a good tone, but I really, really hope that in my lifetime, we could see that line in the catechism reinterpreted. Some people say that it's not possible within my lifetime, but I'm hoping that maybe when I'm a very old woman, maybe I'll see it changed or reinterpreted, I should say.
I hope the same thing too. Now I know those are, okay, so those are easy low hanging fruit for negative things, but so those are three negative things we could talk about that are happening like within the Catholic Church. But tell me, for you, like, what would be three beautiful things you feel like are happening within the Catholic Church?
Well, I think that people are becoming more vocal. I think that the laity is becoming more empowered. And I think that the internet has a big role in that. I think that something that Vatican II, which was the council that kind of brought the Catholic Church kind of into the modern world in the 1960s, I think Vatican II kind of really encouraged Catholics to become adults in the faith, whereas before Vatican II, kind of the tongue-in-cheek phrase was like, oh, lay Catholics are just supposed to pray, pay, and obey, sort of a thing. And Vatican II said no to that and said, no, lay Catholics should participate just like clergy, and maybe in a different way than clergy, but we both should participate as adults within the faith. So I think that I'm seeing more Catholics become vocal about their faith and more adult in their relationship with the church. I guess another thing that I really love to see is I just love Pope Francis. Like, I love that Francis is our Pope, and I really hope that his successor is just like him. Yeah. And then finally, I really love to see that the church is open to synods and open to discussion and open to really, really diving into the hard questions about theology and about God and about social justice issues. And I feel like that church authority, for the most part, isn't being used as much as I feel like the church authority isn't being used as a battering ram as much as it once was. I feel like that more people are being able to come to the table honestly and be able to discuss what is on their hearts and what's on their minds. And I think that's something I also love about what Catholics teach, is that salvation is open to people who don't believe in God. And kind of, I love the way Catholics view salvation in general, that we kind of view it as a gray area, and that we all kind of fall in this gray area, like nobody's black and white, and we should never assume the salvation or damnation of anyone, including people that are not religiously affiliated.
Those are great. Those are great. Thank you for those. So one of my last questions for you is, what for you, Cassidy, what is feeding your soul these days?
Honestly, kind of just going back out in nature again and going back out in the world and having conversations with people. Truthfully, I've been trying to get back into getting into a regular mass schedule again, because of the pandemic, people weren't really able to go to mass safely. Mm-hmm. And honestly, going to mass weekly has always been a struggle for me, even though I absolutely love the Eucharist and I love mass. That commitment is very difficult every week for me personally. I have OCD and a couple other mental illnesses, so it's kind of just like I'm a rather flaky person, even in other areas of my life. So I'm trying to get better at going to mass every week, because I feel like that it spiritually nourishes me, and I think that it's so important for Catholics to go to mass every week, and I think that it's very spiritually fulfilling. So I think that what's been nourishing me spiritually has just been practicing it, being a practicing Catholic and trying my best to, you know, read the stories of the saints. And I mentioned Dorothy Day earlier, but I've been reading a lot about Dorothy Day, and she actually has some books that talk all about like how to improve your prayer life and how to, you know, how to be a better Catholic and how to be a better person. Mm-hmm. So that's been spiritually nourishing for me. Mm.
So what's next for the hippie Catholic and all that you're doing out in the world? What's next for you?
So I think that I am just going to keep having conversations like this one. I'm going to be writing on the blog more, and I'm also going to just continue making content on YouTube and TikTok, and kind of just seeing where it takes me. I'm also working on some music. It's not really religious music. It's kind of more like secular Americana folk music. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I do. But I feel like that for me, I kind of have an approach that's similar to C.S. Lewis when it comes to art. Like, I feel like that my faith kind of shows through my art, mm-hmm. even if it's not quote unquote Catholic or Christian art. I feel like that just my personal beliefs show through that art. So yeah, that's been kind of what I've been up to. And I'm really excited to see the channel grow and to see the community continue to flourish. And I'm so grateful to be able to connect with people like you. And yeah, so that's kind of where we're headed for the hippie Catholic. It seems like it's just going upward.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So in speaking all about the hippie Catholic, how do people find you, follow you, or generally stalk you online? I mean, what do you recommend?
So you can find me on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. Those are kind of like my most active platforms. I also have a Twitch, and I also have a blog that's called thehippiecatholic.com, where you can find my writing. And I also have a link tree that kind of has like all of my links included. So
Cassidy, thank you so much for being on the show today. And this has been a fun conversation. I look forward to having you on again sometime. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on. And I'm excited to continue to, I'm really excited to collaborate with you further. So thank you so much for having me on.
Awesome. I just love these types of ecumenical talks, because it just continues to show me that we can learn so much from each other, and that there is more connecting us than there is dividing us. So in that line of ecumenical thinking, looking at things from different angles, for the rest of the show, I offer you this, a parable from Pete Enns. Here it goes. A young man knocks at the door of a great Talmudic scholar. Rabbi, I wish to study the Talmud. Do you know Aramaic? No. Hebrew? No. Have you ever studied the Torah? No, Rabbi, but I graduated from Harvard summa cum laude in philosophy and received a PhD from Yale. I'd like to go, I'd like to round out my education with a bit of the Talmud. I doubt you're ready for the Talmud. It is the broadest and deepest of books. If you wish, however, I will examine you in logic, and if you pass the test, I will teach you the Talmud. Good. I'm well versed in logic. First question. Two burglars come down a chimney. One emerges with a clean face, while the other with a dirty face. Which one washes his face? The burglar with the dirty face. Wrong. The one with the clean face. Examine the logic. The burglar with the dirty face looks at the one with the clean face and thinks his face is clean. The one with the clean face looks at the burglar with the dirty face and thinks his face is dirty. So, the one with the clean face washes. Very clever. Another question, please. Two burglars come down a chimney. One emerges with a clean face, the other with a dirty face. Which one washes his face? We've established that the burglar with the clean face washes. Wrong. Both wash. Examine the logic. The one with the dirty face thinks his face is clean. The one with the clean face thinks his face is dirty. So the burglar with the clean face washes. When the one with the dirty face sees him washing, however, he realizes his face must be dirty too. Thus, both wash. I didn't think of that. Please ask me another. Two burglars come down the chimney. One emerges with a clean face, the other with a dirty face. Which one washes his face? Well, we both know both wash. Wrong. Neither washes. Examine the logic. The one with the dirty face thinks his face is clean. The one with the clean face thinks his face is dirty. But when clean face sees that dirty face doesn't bother to wash, he also doesn't bother, so neither washes. As you can see, you are not ready for the Talmud. Rabbi, please give me one more test. Okay. Two burglars come down a chimney. One emerges with a clean face, the other with a dirty face. Which one washes his face? Neither. Wrong. And perhaps now you will see why Harvard and Yale cannot prepare you for the Talmud. Tell me how it is possible that two men come down the same chimney and one emerges with a clean face while the other with a dirty face. But you've just given me four contradictory answers to the same question. That's impossible. No, my son, that's the Talmud. That's all I've got this hour. And just a reminder that this broadcast and all past podcasts can be found at www.snarkyfaith.com and wherever else you listen to podcasts. We're here, we're there, we're everywhere. Just look for Snarky Faith. And as I send you out into this wide, wild world, I send you out with the holiest amount of grace and peace and snark. I'll catch you guys again next week. I'm out of here. Peace.
Call me right now, would you please? We need help.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.